It was an early morning in Jerusalem, and Jesus was outside the temple, sitting down and teaching the people who'd gathered around. They were having a great conversation, but all of a sudden, there was a rustle from the outside, and angry men pushed through the crowd, dragging a woman with them. They pushed her down in front of Jesus, some of them in fury, some of them in icy judgment. She'd been caught in adultery, and their willed anger wanted to kill her then and there. But Jesus, who always has a calculus of his own, doesn't immediately respond. At that moment, he's the poster child for James' later exhortation when James says, "Know this, my beloved brothers and sisters. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God." This particular woman's personhood is completely irrelevant to the situation. The person the Pharisees are mad at is Jesus. And their anger over this woman is absolutely excessive to the situation. So Jesus says something rather unique. He bends over and he writes something with his finger in the sand. Have you ever wondered what he wrote? He just writes. And he stands up and he says, "He who is without sin, let him cast the first stone." And then one by one, we're told, starting with the oldest, the Pharisees wrap their stones and go home. And at last, there's no one there but Jesus and this woman. He asks her, "Who is there to condemn you?" And she says, "No one, Lord." And he says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." When we are like the Pharisees, imprisoned in the deadly sin of anger, we kill and destroy. Sometimes we kill with anger that pushes. Sometimes we kill with anger that stands back. When we are like Jesus, empowered by a righteous anger, we heal and we set free. Sometimes by doing nothing more than writing in the sand. It was Jesus' own form of nonviolent resistance. But which is which? And how will we know when we are caught in the deadly sin and when we are actually being righteous? That's the question before us this morning. I've been painting the deadly sins all week as different kinds of prisons. Here's the prison of anger that I want to think about this morning. Imagine a room with a pile of tiles outside of it. Some of them are red, bright red, fire red, attack red. Some of the tiles are white, icy white, withdrawal white. And they sit outside that room, waiting for us to pick them up. And the emotion of anger is just simply a natural human reaction. It's why I put the tiles outside the prison rather than inside. We all feel anger. Anger is a simple human response to obstacles that confront us. When we are confronted by something that is an obstacle, anger rises up in our soul, and it is the natural reaction to having something having gotten in our way. As an emotion, it comes and goes. The tiles remain outside the room and make their appearance once in a while, and anger's magnitude is appropriate to the situation. When I wake up in the morning and I head downstairs for my cup of coffee, and I discover that my son has poured the rest of the half and half on his cereal the night before, it is an obstacle to my day. It's also the sin of gluttony, which I'll talk about tonight. But I do experience, I think, an anger that's justified in the situation. When a car pulls out suddenly in front of a Waterman vehicle, it elicits in my husband a strong emotion that he prefers to call Christian road disturbance. When we're wronged, when we are misunderstood, when we're thwarted, when an obstacle is set in our path, anger is the emotion that enables us to face that obstacle with some degree of energy. And when it's just the emotion of anger, you step on a tile once in a while. You pick it up. It's there. Now some of us, and actually I wish I was a little more like this, some of us are quite free to express the anger. We're in touch with our anger, we can get it out, and it's over with. Others of us tend to internalize our anger. It comes out, it leaks. It doesn't come out nearly quite as freely or as fully. It waits for a little while and comes out in different kinds of ways. But in both of those cases, it can be just simply an emotion. When does the emotion of anger become a deadly sin? It's when we pick up the tile, we carry it through the door, and we cement it to the floor with the glue of our will. It's not simply an emotion anymore. It's when we choose to feed anger that it becomes a deadly sin. We give it fodder. We keep giving it air. We let the fire burn. We let the ice burn in its own kind of way. And when we feed our anger, it becomes dangerous to our souls, and it becomes danger to the souls of others as well. Now, I'm going to have to go back for a moment to where we place our minds, because this, again, is part of where the battle is fought. Yesterday, I talked about fantasies. Today, let me just simply talk about monologues. Monologues are all of those brilliant things that you would say to people who've hurt you. You replay the situation over and over and over in your mind, and you say in your mind all the things that you wish you would have either had the guts to said, or you wish you would have thought to said, or if you could get away with, you would still say. I play these things out in front of the mirror. Because then I can see my face. I can see exactly how I would say them. Am I the only person who does this? No, I didn't think so. We entertain these monologues over and over, and every time we do that, the poison of anger poisons our soul a little bit more, and the cement of the deadly sin of anger gets plastered a little bit farther into that prison. And then what happens is we begin to harbor bitterness in our hearts. It's not just simply something that happens in our minds, because as I said yesterday, our minds are not the control center for the human soul. Our hearts are the control center. And what's going on in our minds is directly connected to what's going on in our hearts. And our hearts become bitter. We cannot conceive of turning the other cheek without at least first pointing out the bruises on the opposite one. See how you've hurt me? See? Just want you to know this. Here's a test that I pray for myself, that I've learned over the years. If I do not want to pray, Lord have mercy on those who have hurt me, I know that my anger line has crossed over from a simple emotion to feeding that deadly sin. Now, I said that very intentionally. If I do not want to pray, Lord have mercy, that's different than being able to pray, Lord have mercy. There are things that have happened in our lives. It takes a long time to actually be able to pray, Lord have mercy. The issue is, do I want to? Do I want to be able to pray that? And sometimes the only prayer I've got is, Lord, have mercy on me that I can't pray that yet. Please soften my heart. Please let bitterness not take residence in me. I've become a George Herbert fan in the last few months. Some of us have our liberal arts education when we're 20. Some of us get it when we're 50. And I have been thoroughly enjoying the poetry of George Herbert, which I will commend to you, the church porch, because it's all about the deadly sins. And one of the phrases in it that has struck me is this: why should I feel another man's errors more than his sicknesses or poverty? Why should I feel another man's errors more than his sicknesses or poverty? Why do I take such umbrage when people have done me wrong? but I don't care nearly as much when they hurt. The deadly sin of anger is not only willed in the sense that we feed it in our minds and that it creates bitterness in our souls, but it's a deadly sin in its because its magnitude is out of proportion to the situation. Now, I told Melissa and Kate that I was going to pick on them. I'm going to do it right now. In this drama, what you have is fire meets ice. And I should say, some of you have asked me, the drama team and I have been working together for over a month to put these dramas together. It has been a fabulous experience. I told them sort of where I was going. They came back with dramas. I would read through them. Some of them, they knocked the ball through the park the first time. And sometimes I said, you know what, let's tweak these a little bit just so that we get this better. And I can't believe how they have played out exactly what it is I'm trying to illustrate. And this morning, with the shattered photograph all over the stage, it's a really excellent example of anger. Thank you very much, girls. Fire and ice. Here's what we see when we walk into this drama. We realize that this is not an initial moment, is it? What we've come into is something that's been going on for quite a while. There has been lots of monologues going on in both heads. There has been bitterness of soul going on in both souls. And now they're going to play it out differently. It's been brewing. It is sustained by their wills. One does not have the impression that either one has been struggling to pray, Lord, have mercy for the other. You get feeding injuries for the past. On the one hand, Melissa talks about all the broken promises that Kate has not kept. And then Kate, after Melissa has left, goes into her monologue, which seems very familiar. Where were you? It's almost poetic, the monologue that she has. It suggests that she's thought it more than once. Where were you? Where were you? Where were you? Fire meets ice. And in the bitterness of both of the souls, what you had is that symbolic destruction of relationship with the rip of the photograph of the two of them. Such sinful anger is the opposite of love. Let me give you a really simple definition of love. It's Joseph Pieper's definition. Well, he's the Catholic philosopher I love to read on these things. How's this for a definition of love? It is good that you exist. It is good that you exist. Basic bottom line, goodwill. What anger does when it attacks is says, I don't want your existence to be well. And when anger withdraws, it says, I don't care if you exist at all. Either way, it is a sin against love. In neither case is it is good that you exist. It is either, I don't want your existence to be well, or I don't care if you exist at all. Now, all of us have some combination of fiery red and icy white tiles on the floor of a prison we call the deadly sin of anger. There are going to be different patterns for different one of us. If you imagine the inside of your prison, maybe some of yours are pretty much just layered with red. Other years, if you were to look at mine, it would be white with a few red blotches spread throughout. I can be the ice queen. And what happens in this kind of thing, when we have just simply tiles, it's the floor is not all covered, it's just that there's tiles there, is that you hit a nerve from time to time. Something happens, some particular kind of obstacle gets stuck in your way, whether it's a friendship or whether it's something else, and it hits a nerve, and the anger goes off, and it is disproportionate to the situation. One of my ongoing struggles in life is I don't like it when people take my toys. And people have a habit of trying to take my toys, it seems, quite often. So I was going through a particular period of time where someone was trying to take away my toys. And that night at supper, I'd been feeding the monologues all day, you know, and the bitterness was going in my soul. And it actually wasn't just a day. It had been a week, several weeks. And my husband, I really wish you could meet my husband. He is a solid, steady, salt of the earth guy. I'm finished with dinner. I'm sitting at the table talking to him, and there's an apple sitting on my plate. And he reaches over to take the apple off my plate, and I took my fork and stabbed him. "Don't take my stuff," was what I said. It was disproportionate to the moment. And it got me really in touch with how angry I really was inside. Not with Wyatt, but with someone else. For some of us, fire and ice fill the room. It's not just that we get angry once in a while, it's that we really struggle with anger. We find ourselves with Mount Vesuvius on the inside of us. We're angry people. And we may very well not want to be angry people, but we're caught in a prison and we're really aware the whole floor is lined with tiles. It's red and it's white, it's all over the place. Some of us withdraw, some of us. And not everyone struggles with anger at this point, in this kind of way. But it's a dangerous kind of sin. This is the most physically dangerous sin to have in terms of how it hurts others. It's a sin that we need to pay attention to. You can hurt others directly with words and with actions. Let's not pretend. Anger can go very far. Stabbing your husband with a fork, it didn't go all the way through his skin, by the way. It was just enough to catch him so that he didn't get my apple. But it illustrates the possibilities, doesn't it? If anger is not dealt with, it can hurt other people. Another way that if we are just angry people, it can hurt others is that we bequeath our anger to others. We give it to them. I had a remarkable experience at one point in my life. I had come into a situation where I was just really welcomed, a lot like this week. Just been really welcomed, and it had been an open, connected, sort of safe place. And over the course of a couple of years, I began to feel more and more paranoid. I would look at people and I would think, they don't like me. And I would not like them. I was in an Anglican church at the time, and during Lent in the Anglican church, you start the service by saying the Ten Commandments. And we got to, "Thou shalt not murder." And I realized, you know what, there's a whole lot of people in this context that I would prefer didn't exist. And I thought, that's rather extreme. I wonder why I think that way. So I took the roster from the place that I was at, and I started just going down and just praying, going, "Lord, if I've got something that I need to forgive or something, just show me what it is." Here's what I discovered. Every person that I had a problem with, quote-unquote problem with, was actually simply having taken in the anger of somebody else who had a problem with them. I was in relationship with somebody who was an angry person. And every person, and they would rehearse the grievances, only they didn't just rehearse them in their mind, they would rehearse them out loud, over and over and over again. And over the course of a couple of years, I had taken all of those grievances into my own soul as though they were mine. And I repented with all my heart. I was like, "Lord, I am so sorry. I have nothing against this person. What I have done is taken in the root of bitterness that's in somebody else." And when you're angry, it's very easy to give your anger away. What you will do is leave a trail of people who are either angry with you or afraid. The world splits into two categories behind you. Now, I am focusing this week on the deadly sins. There are two components to life that I just want to briefly just mention, and that is Churches seem to split in two different directions. Some churches focus on sin, probably not as specifically as we're talking about deadly sins, just overall. We are sinners, and what we do is we deal with sin. Other churches have become places of therapy. You have wounds, and we want to heal your wounds. I want to suggest to you that the way the soul is wired, it has both sins and wounds. And anger, the deadly sin of anger, has got both of those things underneath it. And if you know that you are struggling with anger, or if in the course of your life, Lord, may this seed be planted, if in the course of your life you discover that you come to a place where you are just angry, it may not be enough to just confess the sin of anger. You may need to ask, why am I angry? What is it underneath that makes this so strong? And get help with the wounds as well. Because Jesus is in the business of doing two things: forgiving our sins and healing our souls. And both of those things are really important. There's another kind of anger. It's the anger I want to leave us with this morning. It's not sinful. It's important. It's important that we have it. It's righteous anger. But righteous anger has this component. It's not focused on me. It's focused outward. It's focused on justice. It's focused on obstacles that are before human beings that really need to be fought. It's what anger is for. John Chrysostom, one of the early church fathers, said this: "He who is not angry when he has cause to be sins, for unreasonable patience is the hotbed of many vices." How's that? He who is not angry when he has cause to be sins, for unreasonable patience is the hotbed of many vices. Now, here is one problem. It's very, very difficult for righteous anger to remain righteous if we're the target of the injustice. I can be righteously angry about when I'm the target of the... When you're taking my toys, I can be righteously angry for about 5 minutes. And then it turns. It's a very slippery slope. And so here's what we need. We need community who will speak truth when we're vulnerable. We need others who will be righteously angry when we're too vulnerable to be righteously angry ourselves. Psalm 97 says this: "O you who love the Lord, hate evil." O you who love the Lord, hate evil. That's what anger is for. It is to hate evil. When we say, "Oh, whatever," when we should care, it's the sin of sloth. I will end up on that great note tomorrow. But righteous anger is not an emotion. It's an action for truth, for justice, and ultimately for peace, for real well-being within and between people. It's the kind of anger that propels the kind of justice, that propels the kind of peace that can say, "It is good that you exist, and I want your well-being. I care about it." In Luke, there's an interesting place where Jesus both weeps and is righteously angry. It goes like this: "And when he drew near Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it, saying, 'Would that you, even you, had known on this day the things that make for peace. But now they are hidden from your eyes.'" And two verses later: "And he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold, saying to them, 'It is written, my house shall be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers.'" The cause is so just. And Jesus weeps for the people and confronts the evil. He names what is wrong. He does what it's possible to make it right. And in the end, he entrusts the cause to the just judge and prays for deliverance, even for the people who are not getting it. And so I simply leave with an exhortation as we come to our response of worship this morning. Friends, we need to flee from paving a prison with fire and ice. And we need to live in the spacious place outside where justice and peace can kiss each other. In Jesus' name, amen.